Hi, I'm Steve Todd, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ, a radio program focused on learning more about the musicians that are entertaining you around Waterloo Region. We're featuring your favorite local singer, guitar player, or drummer, learning how they got started, influences, funny stories about past gigs, and upcoming performances. You'll also hear some great recordings of their work. In addition, we'll be learning about others in the music industry that are helping to maintain a vibrant music scene. This is Musicians FAQ. Hey, thanks a lot for listening to Musicians FAQ. It's Steve Todd. And for the next two episodes, we're going to be listening to Paul and Marg Weigel. They're both musicians. Marg spent many years as a senior public music teacher in Wilmot and New Dundee. She taught generations of students of the joy of music. She had a project called Me to We, Free the Children, that turned into a trip to the center in the square, and she actually went to Africa to see some African schools that were built with funds from other schools around the world. Paul's going to be talking about his years of playing drums. He's also a photographer. He's filmed bands such as Led Zeppelin, Phil Collins, Genesis. He's going to give you his views on the joy of music. And he's also going to talk about his Forerunner project with work in Africa and Central America, and then finally topping it off with their joy of sailing around the world. So let's check in with Paul and Marg Weigel.
So the beginning is when my mother and father were having an anniversary, and my dad said, "Why don't I buy you a Hammond organ?" My mother. Wow. And she said, "Oh, that would be great." And some free music lessons came with the Hammond organ. 10 free lessons. And she said, "I don't need them," because she did play church music and directed choirs and whatnot. So she said, "Margaret, you take the lessons." So I took the lessons from an old Scottish guy who played by chords and had a terrific ear. He played a lot by ear.
And where was this?
This is in Sarnia.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Is that where you grew up?
That's where I grew up.
Okay, cool. Right on.
Yeah. So I started taking organ lessons with the two keyboards and the pedals going back and forth.
Good
for you. I was 10 years old. And really enjoyed it. Took me a while to get the foot pedals going, but after a while I was whizzing around doing all sorts of things. And then he took me to some country fairs. And so when he was setting up selling for the Hammond organs, he was also a salesman, he'd put this little 10-year-old on the organ and I'd play, you know, 12th Street Rag and all these old songs and whiz around and play by ear. So I also then took some conservatory lessons and got my grade 8 and grade 2 theory. And then when I was becoming a teacher, I took a music course when I was in teacher's college, and they came to London to hire people for Waterloo School Board up here where I was coming. So the interviewer says, so he's got his pad and paper in front of him, because there were actually 200 teachers were hired that day from Waterloo.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, because it was in 1969, 70. Wow. So baby boomers, which I am, we were all having kids and the school boards were exploding and they just needed, they needed personnel. So in this interview, they're taking these notes and, "Would you like to teach music?" And they wrote down, and he wrote down my answer. I thought he wrote down my answer. "And would you like city or country?" And I said, "Oh, city," because I'm not really a country or a country girl. "And would you like little kids or big kids?" "Oh, I think I'd like kindergarten or grade one." So he made these notes on his paper. And so I did get hired. And I got a letter, report to Morris Whitish, RR2 Petersburg, Wilmot Senior School. Well, I drove up here from Sarnia, so it was about a 2-hour drive by myself. I finally found the school. I had driven through Petersburg, and there's a really old school in Petersburg, one of those really old ones, 18-something. But that wasn't it, so I had to call them and find out where to go. Yeah. So the school I was assigned to
was... That's way before cell phones and GPSs,
too. Yeah, so I was assigned to a school actually just up the road from where I live now, where I live in Shingletown. And here's this school in the middle of nowhere. There's a cemetery on one side. There's a cow farm across the street, and I walk in.
Was it a one room schoolhouse or something?
No,
like that,
it was a big school. It's a two-story school, over 300 kids in that school. I had no idea what kind of school.
And this would be, so I'm guessing this is like St. Agatha and Petersburg?
Yeah, Baden kids come.
Okay.
There's kind of a line, St. Agatha, so around here, even on the outskirts of Kitchener, they got all bused.
Yeah.
So when I got in there, I said, "Oh, where are the little kids?" They said, oh, there's no little kids here. This is a senior school. And I said, what's that? Because we didn't have senior schools down where I was living.
Wow.
And they said, oh, it's only grades 7 and 8. And I said, the whole school is just grades 7 and 8? And they said, yeah. And they said, oh, you must be the new music teacher. And I just about fell over because I thought, oh my gosh, I don't want to teach grades 7 and 8 music. Like, what, you know, what's this going to be like?
Yeah.
And so there I was in the middle of nowhere. I wasn't in the city. I was not teaching kindergarten. I was teaching grades 7 and 8. And I was the music teacher.
Yeah.
So I got nothing.
And plus, did you have accommodations? Because you're alone, right? Like you're
No, but I was getting married.
Okay.
So I was going to be living up
here.
Okay.
So you had partner.
So that was all right. Yeah. Okay. I tell you though, I cried all the way home.
Yep.
So for 2 hours, I cried from that day because I also went up to the music class and there was an old lady who's probably my age now, probably younger. And the class was just chaos. It was chaos. The kids were yapping and talking and throwing things around the room. And the teacher was over at the PA system trying to get to the office and pretending she was talking to the principal. Oh, you better sit down or I'm going to call the principal. And I just, my eyes rolled around my head and I thought, I can't do this. And so I cried all the way home.
Oh, wow. Not back to Sarnia, though. Just back
Yeah, no, back to Sarnia.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow.
I did. I cried for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
But I started in September, so I got married that June, my
yep.
first marriage, and came up and moved in and got to the school.
Yeah.
And they had a big upright piano.
Yeah.
And I turned it so that I could hide behind the piano and the class would be out there.
Yeah.
Because I just was really afraid. You know, I hadn't, but you, in teachers' college, you hadn't really been taught the skills necessary to kind of just do the whole thing. All of a sudden,
wow.
bam,
yeah.
you're the music teacher, right?
Yes.
And it was vocal music.
Okay.
So luckily, I said when I retired, God didn't give me what I wanted. He gave me what I needed. So I was there, and for the first few months, I just hid behind the piano. It was 1970, so there was tons of great music, popular music.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, I've got to get these kids to sing somehow.
Yeah,
they were so turned off.
Like that,
yeah. Eleanor Rigby, Beatles, anything
yeah.
I could find. And gradually, they came around.
Yeah.
So I taught like 8 grade 7 classes and 7 grade
wow,
7, 8
crazy.
Classes. So rotary music.
Yeah.
Plus a little English and math or something.
So was it chaos at first? It's just
yeah, it was
like
pretty well chaos.
Like for the first 3 months or something?
Yeah, until I kind of got my feet.
Okay.
And my fingers going. And then they realized that I was this 20-year-old. I was just 20, turning 21.
Wow. Good.
And I had some boys in my class who had failed once or twice who were maybe even 15, 16 years old.
Yep.
And I was just 20. And it was miniskirt time, so I had little short skirts on. And one of my students, many, many years later, he said to me, he said, you know, it wasn't the music we really liked. It was your miniskirts.
That's cute.
Thank you.
Hola, este es Alejandro Ramírez de Bogotá, Colombia. Usted está escuchando 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo. Saludos.
All right, we're back. Thanks for listening to Musicians FAQ. I'm Steve Todd, and let's continue our interview.
The other really saving grace, so I kind of got them going just because I like music, and I, you know, I tried to be a nice person and treat them like human beings. But there was another fellow on staff who had just been hired, and we both said, you know, we got to do a contribute something here to the school. And our students used to go to Waterloo, Oxford. Waterloo, Oxford at the time was very famous for its choral music program.
Okay.
And huge, big Gilbert and Sullivan operettas.
Okay.
So I thought, well, if our kids go from grade 8 to that school, why can't we do something like that here? So I transcribed Tom Sawyer, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, off of, I cribbed it.
Wow.
All the music,
good
and I
you.
Found a book, and we got some words, and we decided we're going to run a big operetta. So we started doing operettas. The whole school was involved, and we got like sets and costumes and makeup and build all that stuff.
That wouldn't happen today. I don't think even today it wouldn't happen.
Well, they do still do some.
Yeah, but just to get everybody, the whole school involved.
Yeah, the whole school.
Impossible, I
think. Yeah, but that was 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I ended up running a ukulele club, and then I got some instruments in sometime, and I had big choirs, and our operettas were really successful. We would run them for 3 nights and 2 afternoons, and then kids would kind of feed into my school at grade 7, looking forward to being in an operetta. We did Your Good Man Charlie Brown.
Yeah, kids in grade 6 were probably thinking, wow, I get to go to that
school. Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Like just some really, really, really good ones.
Yeah.
And Christmas choirs and all that stuff. So I was there until I started having a family. So I was there about 8 years and then stopped and stayed home for 8 years and then ended up being hired back with Waterloo after my kids were kind of back in school and doing on their own. And I was hired in New Dundee, which was very close. In fact, New Dundee kids used to feed into Wilmot Senior.
Okay.
So the students... the parents would come into the school now and they'd say, oh, you must remember me. And my name was Kennedy, Mrs. Kennedy, because you taught my dad.
Oh,
you taught my
That's
mother,
amazing.
Right? Because now they were having children.
That must feel so good.
It was really good.
I bet.
Yeah, because it was it's a wonderful community. They were just very supportive and I loved them and they loved me and we just got along really, really well.
So, I think just to be able to all of a sudden start playing, whether it's Eleanor Rigby or Let It Be or one of those, or an old Rolling Stones song or something like that, and just have everybody just light up and just start singing along and everything must have been just incredible.
Well, and we had a music duo tang. So I would write, in those days we didn't think about copyright so much. So I'd write the music or get the copy of the music and the words. Honestly, I met students probably 30 years later, and they'd say to me, I've still got my grade 8 music book.
Wow.
You know, all those old great songs that we sang. Now, it wasn't just popular music, because once I got them, then I ended up being able to teach four-part gospel songs.
Yeah.
Gospel tunes.
Wow,
and
nice.
Reading music, and music appreciation, and Beethoven. And, you could do all of that once you kind of hook them in.
And you only have them for 2 years, right?
That's right, and then
they're
gone.
Grade 8. And then you never see them again.
Yeah.
So.
Just as I was leaving, I think we ended up having grade sixes. So it became grade 6, 7, and 8, which helped.
Okay.
Because our enrollment was starting to go down.
Yep.
Thank you.
follows a message from Chris Arrett to Marg Weigel. I guess at the time she was known as Mrs. Kennedy, and Chris was a former student of Marg's.
I was so fortunate to have Marg as a music teacher back in 1971 and 72 when I was in grade 7 and 8. Music has always been my favorite subject, as I played starting when I was 6 years old. I started out with a ukulele, so by the time I got to public school, I was still playing the ukulele. When I got to senior public school, I started to play guitar and mandolin, and I was encouraged by Marg to try the instruments to see what I really liked. And I, to this day, I do play several instruments. I play them not as a master, but just for fun, which is good because music should be fun. So Marg would have been teaching us mostly recorder and singing, and she is a fantastic piano player. So we were lucky. We got to sing modern day hits, like when I think back now, well, the Beatles had Maxwell's Silver Hammer, which I found out when I was 60, which was last year, that is a story about serial killing. But anyway, we didn't know that then and it didn't matter. We had a lot of fun and she taught us how to sing harmony, and she always encouraged us to have our own style. She said, not everybody can play the same. So it kind of made me feel good because I thought I don't have to try and play like everyone else. In the end, Marg encouraged me to do whatever I want with music. I even learned how to play a banjo, which is not an easy thing to do. But she always said, you know, just try it and you might like it. So I have all good memories about Marg. She was a wonderful teacher and a good person. And I'm so grateful that she led us all, the students, to enjoy the music and just do what you want, feel what you want. So Marg, I'm so glad that I got to do this, and I hope to continue to play music again. Of course, right now it's not that easy, and I'll always remember you for encouraging me and all of your students.
Hi, I'm Chris Douglas from Cambridge, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo.ca.
My other really great music story is this, that I taught at New Dundee, and I was there for 20-some years. So all together, I put about 32 years in teaching. And I taught music there as well, rotary music, did the choirs, wrote music for plays, and we did operettas good there too, whole school operettas. And then one day I read the story about the Me to We group, Free the Children. And it's started by a 12-year-old boy who found out that there was a 12-year-old like him over in India who had been chained to a weaving loom since he was 3 to do weaving. Never had the opportunity to go to school. And at that time, New Dundee was putting a big addition on our school. And I thought, oh man, the juxtaposition of that. Here's kids that are, you know, strapped to weaving looms, can't go to school, and here in Canada, where we have so much wealth, and we're putting millions of dollars into a school, and it just impacted me so much. So I read a lot more about what was happening there, and I thought, you know, there was a movement in that organization to raise money so they could build a school in Africa. So I decided I was going to present this to our staff and our parent-teacher council and say, this is something that I think our school would be really good for us as a community to do that. And they all thought that was a great idea. So the Optimist Club, the Women's Guilds, and all these people collected and supported everything we did. We had a huge fundraiser one night.
New Dundee, it's all New Dundee community.
Good
for you.
Okay, yeah, great. So that's a kindergarten to grade 5 school.
Okay, yeah.
And so then I got this idea, okay, I could write a song for this. So I took the words Me to We, and I wrote choral piece. The Optimists donated all the money for a hard copy to create a CD that we would use then as a fundraiser. And we had contest for the decorating the cover. Wow. Somebody else donated an engineer, sound engineer, yep. Came to the school and recorded every student singing. Yep. So we had from kindergarten to grade five, all the kids singing. Wow. And I'd gone around to all of the classes and assemblies and whatnot and talked about building a school for children that can't go to school. I said, we break pencils here. You know, kids break pencils and waste paper. And I said, these kids don't even have pencils. Yeah. So let's see what we can do. So we recorded the song, and then it was engineered. It came out just as school was ending that June. This was in 2008, I think.
Wow, okay.
And so the CDs went out, and everybody bought them. Like, we raised like $30,000.
Good for you. That's amazing.
So we ended up being able to send enough money to build a school.
It's amazing how, like, one little idea becomes way more than just you. Like, it just becomes the whole community gets involved.
I know. And it's just these little ideas or little gems, and then when someone else kind of connects to it, you're, like you said, it builds, and the mass is there. And then, really beautifully, a couple of years after that, we had a family in our school who were professional musicians, and I had taught their children. And When I was writing the song, I went to this one fellow and I said, you know, is there anything I should do with this song? And I played it for him. He said, that's really great. And he said to me, I can just see this up at the center in the square. Everybody singing this song. And so right. And so that happened. And we went around singing the song here and there at openings and at the school. But then pardon me?
Over the summer?
Over the summer. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Next school year. Yep. And I was retiring at the end of that year. But two or three years later, I got a call from somebody and they said, we'd like to have your song, we'd like to choose it to sing at the Kodai Choral Festival that presents at the center in the square. And that would be 1,000 children singing this song, which I had dedicated to this little Indian boy who'd been chained to this weaving loom. So I said, of course you can use it. And they hired someone to re-orchestrate it for a small orchestra. And it was on for two nights. So one night there were 500 students from all over Waterloo County singing it. And the next night, 500 students singing it. And I was just so filled with...
Okay. I can feel it.
Yeah, gratitude.
Benita's almost crying right now.
I am. I just...
To be able to...
I think that's awesome.
To bring the message of hope and the message of working together to help these other people around the world.
Wow.
And...
What a great ending to your career, too. Because it sounds like that was your last year of teaching?
Yeah, that was right near the end of my career. And I could have retired close to around that time, and I couldn't. Because I felt I still had, I was still finishing, you know, this thing. And music really, it brought everybody together.
Yeah.
You know, we'd do it in our gym. And I remember that night of when we presented it at our big fundraising thing to just have money coming in. And people were just so generous. And it was just from watching their children sing watching them give of themselves for others through the music, you know.
Yeah,
I think Benita's have
that's okay. No, I think I think that's fabulous. I think, you know, when we are committed and we are focused on really truly loving and bringing people together, it brings great joy.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah,
wow.
That's
I
after I retired, Paul and I were able to go and do some work in Africa and saw schools that were, we couldn't go right to the school that we had contributed to because they don't really kind of like you going right to where, but whatever.
Yeah.
But we did have an opportunity to hold some of the kids in different schools that we went to, and it really made me kind of feel like what had started way over in Canada was taking root. Maybe not even through that particular project, but just, you know, coming together.
Mud huts.
Yeah, mud huts. Oh,
kids that were just so full of joy to be able to be in school.
Yeah.
For them, they didn't see it as a task or a cause of you know, like, oh, this is a burden. They just saw it as an opportunity. They were so excited and so full of joy and so, you know, appreciating the opportunity to learn something, to do something exciting, to get outside of their world. And, you know, we just being there was like, it was like a privilege to see kids that, you know, just wanted to learn, wanted to grow, wanted and it was encouraging. And just think about that, in one way, even though we didn't go to the specific school, we were able to taste what that work was contributing towards. It was an amazing moment.
Sure. Yeah, so that's my music story.
That's quite the journey.
That's okay. A fabulous story.
Well, it's been a wonderful, as I said at the beginning, you know, I didn't want to teach at that school. I didn't want to be a music teacher, but it was what I was created to do. Through music, it brought me so much joy.
And how many musicians, in whether it's Tavistock or Newton D or San Diego, are still around, like playing? Like, I know Chris Arrett, and there's probably a million other people.
Yeah, well, around. I don't know about a million, but
there's probably so many other.
It's a high number.
Many people playing, whether they're playing at a church or just for a hobby or or professionally.
Well,
because
just
of yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, it's awakening that joy. Like, unfortunately, the experience they were having wasn't so good, and it wasn't that it was the music. It was just that catching them on, because everybody loves music. Yeah. I mean, it speaks to most people.
Well, you were young enough to understand the Beatles and everybody else, like the Grateful Dead or other bands that were popular back then.
Yeah, Both Sides Now. Do you remember that song, Both Sides Now?
Joni Mitchell. I still sing that song. Yeah. It's a great song.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there were a lot of songs that turned out I chose a lot of songs that had messages in them. It wasn't just, a pop song. It was ones, and we'd talk about them.
Yep.
And remember the one the history of rock and roll? Remember that one?
Oh, McCarthy's
Pie.
Yeah.
Yep.
American Pie.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And then we talk about what were all those references to in the song?
Sure.
Yeah.
Because
they were other prophets of the era.
Yeah.
You know, for me, music is that voice of the spiritual in the tangible world.
Mm-hmm.
It straddles both two dimensions. One is the dimension that we are in, and the one that is out there in another place.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think there's a song by stuck on the name, but he said and I'm paraphrasing, that the prophets of the age are written on the subway wall.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Simon.
Yeah,
and really, when you think about it, really, most of the musicians had something important to say in our time.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. And especially Dylan is huge.
Dylan. But we mentioned Joni Mitchell. We mentioned
Carole King.
King. We met, you know, there are a lot of people that, you know, had things to say in an era. And the beauty of looking back at these people, who some of the listeners might say, oh, well, that's a long time ago, but is to see what they said and what was going on at that same time and what they were saying, which elevated our thinking beyond where we were thinking at the time. We weren't thinking, well, here's the answer. We were going, here's the answer. And then somebody came along and created a paradigm shift that made us go, holy crap, that's a whole different way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, we had the pleasure of being part of that. And for me, I was more of a student of music. I didn't want to do it as a career, because I felt I had other directions that were more imminent in my own life. But I loved music too, you know, and I loved the process and the ability to use it as a tool to speak to people and elevate them.
Rows and clothes of angel hair and ice cream pencils in the air, feather canyons everywhere. I looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I
Phil Morgan from Cambridge. You're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo.
Well, it was a really funny story. Fred Smith is a guitar player and great guitar player. Yep. Played in the what they call the Roadhouse Band.
Lulu's
Roadhouse Band. And he's a touring musician. He plays in lots of shows and so on. And we were just sort of talking about all kinds of things, and he said, you know, when I got out of Humber Jazz School, I made a commitment to play at least a half an hour a day, just committing that much time, a half an hour every single day. And he said, And I said to him, well, how did you do? Like, you know, that's probably 20 years ago. You know, were you able to do it? And he said, no, I did a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Because once I got started and I started playing, what happened is I couldn't stop. I just had, it was so pleasurable, so rich, so invigorating that I didn't want to stop.
Yep.
And so I did, my average would be really high, like over an hour every day.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, yeah, when you tell that story, that's me.
Yeah.
I do have some trouble starting, but once I get started, I just don't want to quit.
If I can add my Fred Smith story, like I used to take guitar lessons for me in high school. Mm. So I used to drive my little Chevette, if you remember a Chevette.
Yeah.
I'm sure you remember. Yeah, I drive over there. But I was so intense. I was so into guitar. I would go to Fred and I would just be like, he said he was actually shaking at the end of the lesson.
From your intensity.
I was constantly pushing. I'm like, what the hell? Like,
you know,
how do you learn this next chord? And
yeah, wow.
What happens there? And I remember he telling me that. He said, he doesn't need any more coffee today.
Yeah, Freddie is a really cool guy. You know, he really knows how to kind of just be calm and cool.
Oh, for sure. I have fond memories of him. He showed me a lot of neat stuff. So.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would.
He's a great guy and a good example. To other musicians of a life well lived. I mean, he's got lots of life left. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that he's made some good choices, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I learned from him, and it has turned out to be enriching to my own life.
Yeah.
Hey, the following recording is one of Marg Weigel's originals. It's called I Am Going to Tell the Truth, and it was recorded in Fred Smith's studio. Let's have a listen.
Truth.
truth.
Ciao! Sono Tamara Madeline e state ascoltando CKMS 102.7 Radio Waterloo. Grazie dell'ascolto.
Out of all the musicians I've met, you are in the top
3%. Oh, thank you very much.
Yes, for sure. Thanks for talent.
Oh, thanks.
You've got it coming out your ears. You can't even stop it.
Yeah,
the other one is Margaret, my beautiful wife.
Yep.
And there is one guy I met about 25 years ago who had that same gift, that he could kind of pick up any instrument and make music with it. And those are amazing talents.
Yep.
And ones that which I feel almost put an obligation on you to use that talent because it's so extraordinary.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to actually just kind of, at this point, just trying to bring people together. So whether it's the open mic or whatever, just to try to get people to sort of...
And to be honest with you, I thought you did it better than anybody I'd seen anybody do it before.
Yeah, I mean, just try to be welcoming and try to make everybody feel good about themselves and make sure people clapped at the end of whether it's good or bad.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
It's part of respecting.
Really yeah, for sure.
Yeah, respecting.
And get people to come back, and people would come back and they would learn another song and they would perfect the original song.
Right. Respect.
Yeah, for sure.
That's for sure.
And
that's respect. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's if you look there, I'm not going to name any names, but there's people that have improved dramatically.
Oh, that's for sure.
Over the over the years.
Yeah.
From just coming out. And
well, you made it very welcoming there, you know, because I'm not really, I was okay kind of playing in front of my school class.
Yeah.
But doing a public thing was a more of a challenge for me, but you were able to kind of draw that out of people. Yeah, make you feel
No, the way you, the culture that you promoted was extremely important in speaking to people, it's okay to come here and risk, you know, and a lot of open mics don't have that culture.
Not at all.
And the culture that you built was exceptionally important in advancing people. You know, there's one young guy who I think got enough positive affirmation for him to say, I'm going to take a chance on this. I'm going to develop this. I'm going to, you know, contribute to making this part of my life more valuable, giving it a higher priority.
Yeah.
I will tell you a little story, and you don't need to roll the tape for this one.
Okay, no problem.
But
make it dirty.
For some reason
we need some salty. We need some salty stuff for this.
Well, let me tell you. You can roll tape on this one.
Getting to joy.
Yeah, it's a really key thing because, you know, everybody is fed by joy. It actually gives them strength in their life to do what they got to do if they have a regular dose of joy.
Yep.
It creates. It gives you strength, right? So I had started a thing with the jazz room at the Hoother Hotel.
Okay, yep.
Stephen Priest really daringly, you know, extended us the opportunity to do a show. And so we invited a great drummer named Paul Lalonde from Toronto, who is you know, a great studio player.
Sounds
and
familiar.
He plays with a bunch of bit acts.
Okay.
I won't go through his list, but it doesn't matter. He's a great player. So we interviewed him, and I remember there was a lady, a young woman there. She was, you know, had a son that was about, I'm trying to guess, maybe about 12 or 15, somewhere in that age group.
Okay.
And I remember saying something about the importance of joy, getting to joy. Like, not every day do you get to joy. It's not like some magic little... you know, put the coin in and pull the lever and out comes the joy. Some days it works and some days it doesn't, but it seems to be there when you really most need it.
Yep.
And I remember saying to her that, or not to her, but in her presence, I remember looking at her and she was looking right at me. And I said these words that getting joy was the reason I continue to play for all these years. More than 50 years I've been playing the drums.
Good for you.
And I remember her saying, "Now I know, understand my son." I can just see she was going, "I get what you're saying. I'm not a player, but I know what my son is about now. It's about the joy." And so, yeah, you know, just for me, it was an opportunity to spread that,
that
level of consciousness about what it can do for you.
Yep.
And that it was for a young player who was starting out in a lifetime of playing music, mm-hmm. playing drums. And that was also very, very satisfying, extremely satisfying.
Yeah, for you. And you guys have experienced music in Kenya, I know. Like you went to different jazz festivals and probably all kinds of stuff in South America, I'm sure, right?
Too? Yeah, Latin America, yeah. Yeah, just our post-working career after we retired, we started an organization and that was to help people. And we taught entrepreneur camps in Latin American countries. Helping young kids learn about how to start a business and run a business.
Yep.
And so that was part of it. But our very first contact in Costa Rica was a guy who was a sax player.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any money. Somebody gave him a sax, and it was in poor condition, but he figured out how to play it. And he like a bulldog, wrestled that instrument to the ground. I mean, he was pretty terrible at the beginning, to be honest.
Well, no,
because
he had
no teachers, and he just was determined to figure out how to do it. And he used his sax playing as a way of getting through school. He now has a degree in programming and has a really good job with a multinational corporation that operates out of Costa Rica. Music has been for him an affair.
Yeah.
You know, an affair. Like this week we saw him playing, he was playing some song, I forget what it was.
Oh, just on Facebook or something?
Yeah. He posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, and he still goes out and does weddings. He doesn't need the money at this point. But he still loves to get out there and get in front of people and entertain them with his playing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, music has a powerful tool to draw people together. We underestimate it every day.
Well, even getting back to Margs, right back to kids in grade 7 that are just unruly, and and you were able to kind of draw them in with Ellen Rigby or Let It Be or whatever else you were singing.
Blowing in the Wind, that song, when you were talking about where ideas come from.
You.
That was a song that the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind.
Yep.
And there are a lot of good lyrics in that song that we talked about so, where the world was. Yeah.
You guys are amazing. It's unbelievable the how everything kind of goes around in a big circle.
Yeah.
And now your extended family actually is, you have many Latin American...
we have family from Colombia, right? And Argentina. In our family,
it's incredible.
And,
lots of friends, many friends that we stayed in touch with, who are helped us put on the film festival and helped us do our entrepreneur camp.
Yep.
And you know, it's really an opportunity to grow personally.
Oh, for sure.
To be able to find people who come from an entirely different culture and way of thinking. And then to find that common ground, that thing that we both go, I got you and you got me, and we're connected. And that, I believe, happens more often than ever with music.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I had a quote up years ago that was, music is the universal language of mankind. So it's one we can all speak, right? Mm-hmm. And we're really blessed. We have a lot of professional musicians as friends. We count as good friends. And we love to play with them. We love to go and hear them when they're performing. And we're saddened right now that there isn't really live music.
Well, just do the best you can.
We do. All through the all the jazz festivals we go to that we love, and we support the jazz room. And
our, the, you know, our the people that I feel are my true peeps, they are my people, are people who either love music or play it.
Yep, for sure.
And, you know, I don't think, if I took out all the musicians out of my life, there would be a hole the size you could drive a Mack truck through.
Yep.
Because they are that's my exactly special like,
yeah.
people.
Yep, for sure.
Just because they speak the same language, we speak, you know, we have the same value system. You know, I get them.
Yep.
You know, and they contribute enormously to my life.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For sure.
I love seeing like a 1 year old something wearing a diaper, but they're already bouncing along to the music. They've already got the rhythm and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing.
They can't talk yet or something.
They can't talk.
We have a granddaughter who does that. She's a Colombian.
Oh, really?
Wow. And, you put on Latin music, and the next thing, you know, she's salsa.
She's
4 years old, right?
She's doing salsa. Oh, she's just got the feet work and everything.
Yeah. Unbelievable.